All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Friday, November 3rd. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis
from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com or DFSR.com. For short, go over and check out a free trial of our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's NFL optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, basketball as well. So it covers it all under one subscription package. And you're all good to go. DFSR.com/NBA will get you started. And we think you will be happy with the service and stick with us for the long term, as our many customers are doing as we speak. And go over to the chat room too and just kind of ask that question, and you'll get an honest response from our users. And we're proud of what we do, and we think you'll like the service as well. All right, buddy, week nine. Before we get to week nine, I have a scenario I want to throw out for you here that happened to me yesterday, and tell me if there's any planet where this would ever happen to you.
Is this from Dungeons & Dragons game?
Yeah, it was in my Dungeons & Dragons game last night, but that's that's neither here nor there about what the rest of it is. So I'm getting together with a group of guys last night, and I go to leave, and my shoes are missing. The shoes that I put my shoes by the front door when I came in, and my shoes are just completely gone.
So the idea there's being another that someone else grabbed your shoes and put them on and walked out thinking that they were his.
100%. Now, it was not one of the guys I was playing. It was the guy's father-in-law had been there, because there was another pair of shoes eerily similar to mine, but clearly not mine, like completely different color inside. How drunk, out of it, old do you need to be to just be like to go and be like, yep, these are my shoes. These are definitely the ones I wore. They feel exactly like the ones I wore in here and that I wear over walking around every day. And now they're going to be the ones that I leave with and just leave with. Do you think this is a thing that could ever happen to you? Or is this person, or do we need to have this person's head checked?
Well, as you know, I very rarely wear shoes in the first place. So it doesn't sound like something that would happen to me. But it's so crazy because the inside of shoes actually kind of mold to your feet, like especially modern shoes. So like if you put them in there, unless for some reason you have the exact same foot shape, which is basically impossible, like it's just gonna feel really weird. And like it's I don't that's so uncomfortable. So what'd you do, by the way? Did you just wear
drove home barefoot home? drove home in socks. Just
you didn't bring his shoes with you?
Why would I bring his? Then I got to return his shoes. It's a big hassle. Like I'm not gonna I'm already worried about getting my shoes back. I don't want to be also tasked with getting this guy's shoes back.
Well, let's
to
be
him,
clear, so. You're not gonna get your shoes back. That's kind of what I was thinking.
I'm hoping to get them back today. All right, well let's talk week nine in the NFL. Yeah, I love those shoes too. So a lot of stuff going on, and the big one, we're gonna go game by game here, break down all the different injury related pieces, break down some of the plays you can make from a bunch of games here in the NFL. If you want our cash game, please go back and listen to yesterday's podcast where we went position by position. Though I will say one of the positions is severely compromised now because the terrible news comes out yesterday. Ooh. Deshaun Watson tears his ACL in non-contact injury in practice. It was anytime you hear non-contact, and the NFL, it's crazy, man. The NFL news cycle and just reporting is so fast now that like the injury part and the fears about the injury were there was like four different notes that came through as it progressed through the, them diagnosing the injury. You hear non-contact. Obviously, he has an ACL tear. You know, he was going to be the chalk play this week. You know, look, injuries are terrible, and so I'm not going to make light of an injury. That's the first and foremost. It just sucks. Yeah. You feel bummed out when anyone gets hurt, and guys that are real high profile having great year, like MVP style years for a team it's not necessarily worse, but it gets more high profile. What does this do? I mean, we just need to basically just take every Texans guy off the board, right? Like Savage is going to start. But, you know, all the guys we mentioned yesterday, like, you know, we would talk briefly about Lamar Miller. We did talk about DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, I just instantly went in and just lowered these guys pretty significantly. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, it's over, man. You can't play any of those guys. You'd have to be you'd have to have some kind of gamble in you to roll with Tom Savage. He looked awful in week one when he was out there. Aside from his FanDuel picture looking again like a picture of Nick Cage in a football movie, his actual football skills were terrible too. 7 for 13, 62 yards, 2 fumbles, just couldn't get out of his own way. I don't think you can play any Texans, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I think that's going to be like that for the foreseeable future. It's still a great matchup. Indy stinks, but you just can't. It's just too much of an unknown, and it's just such a massive downgrade from Watson to Savage that I just don't know. And the line has not. I think they took this game off the board for the time being as they kind of just try to figure out where it's going to land betting wise. I mean, on the other side of the ball, Indy, theoretically the game's going to stay closer now. Hey, you know what? Oh yeah, well, I take it back. It was minus 13 for the Texans. It's now minus 7. They dropped 4 points off their total, and Indy actually goes up 2 points from 17.5 to right around 20. Anything on the Indy side of the ball that you think you could get behind? I mean, they're supposed to put up more points now, presumably just because of more possessions, not because like the defense got worse without Watson, but they're just going to have the ball more. Anything else? Anything you like on that side of the ball?
Not really. I mean, T.Y. Hilton's a guy you can take a chance on these prices. 6,600 is probably, you know, you could call it too low for his upside. The guy's also scored fewer than 10 fantasy points over the course of his last 3 weeks total. So this is a long way of saying no, I'm still not interested in anyone on the Indianapolis side of the ball. People played Jack Doyle last week, and he was actually kind of good. 14 targets, 12 receptions there, and the touchdown. So maybe actually he qualifies. And actually, as I think about it, he probably isn't that, you know, short list of tight ends we can consider, but everyone else seems too far out of the picture for me to want to invest any sort of serious salary.
You know, going back to Houston real quick, Lamar Miller does still, he hasn't been very good, but this is still, when you're checking boxes of like what you want out of a running back, they are still pretty heavy favorites. Minus 7, still, you know, a pretty solid line for a team. And their team is still supposed to put up close to 27 points. Lamar Miller is coming in the mid-range, and it really stands to reason they're going to need to run him more than they probably were going to with Deshaun Watson there. Do you think, is it worth it to bump up Miller's carries a little bit here?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you could bump up his carries. You still shouldn't play him. The guy's one of the worst running backs in the league on a yards per carry basis. Just go look at this game log. On an offense that they really have to respect the pass, the guy goes 21 for 54, 15 for 41, 15 for 74, 20 for 75, 14 for 56, 18 for 61, and 17 for 65. That is terrible. He is not top 75 yards on the season, in spite of his fewest carries or touches in any given game being 15. The guy's just not, it's not an effective running game. And yeah, maybe you want it because he's going to have some portion of the touchdowns or whatever. But if you can really bet this game with an under of 27 for the Texans, bet that, because there's no way this team in an average game is going to score 27 points.
Yeah, I think it's more a testament to how bad Indy's defense is, and maybe it's just a little bit of hangover that they, you know, people want the Texans to be good because they were good, but it was mostly because of Watson. Another 1 o'clock game is the Rams going in to face the Giants. We did talk about a bunch of players from this game in their cash game podcast yesterday. We talked about Todd Gurley and being in a pretty good spot. Also, some parts of the Giants passing game, specifically Sterling Shepard and Evan Ingram, that look like they're coming in at pretty nice prices there. I'm wondering your thoughts here. Janoris Jenkins is actually suspended for a game and is out this week. I don't think he was going to like shadow cover either Watkins or a Cooper Kupp, but I'm wondering, you know, with him gone, Giants defense against the pass not being all that good. I mean, can we talk ourselves into guys? I mean, specifically Cooper Kupp. That's a guy that our system like. He's coming fairly cheap. We've seen, I mean, enough of a target share. It's mostly just a price thing on him. What do you think of him?
Yeah, he's interesting, I think. I mean, you know, it kind of comes and goes for him, and that seems to be very matchup dependent. Last 4 weeks, 7 targets, 8 targets, 3 targets, but then 10 targets last week against Arizona. The problem is that his conversion isn't excellent either. So, you know, in that $6,000 price range, certainly you're getting some kind of deal, but I think some of the other guys we talked about yesterday for cash games are going to be just dramatically higher owned and safer plays. So I don't think this is where you want to spend your $6,000 for your cash game purposes, but for big tournaments, sure. I mean, he's a very worthwhile investment. If he can touch double-digit targets against a now-depleted Giants secondary, I think he can do something with it.
Yeah, I think that's probably where I land with him too. I don't love typically, I mean, again, I think Gurley's in a great spot. I don't love landing on some of these Rams receivers because it's pretty inconsistent over the course of the season. But that's a guy, I mean, 4,500 on DraftKings is a pretty nice price. Cooper Kupp is actually coming in as the second highest overall points per dollar play. I mean, again, that's relative to his price, obviously. So it's not like he's the top rated value guy, but he does possibly fit a need in terms of salary relief that I don't mind, especially against the secondary that looks a little bit banged up. With Giants side of the ball, I mean, beyond the two guys in Shepard and Ingram, we talked about the run game. It's a complete mess. It has been all season. They're still underdogs. I don't know. Nothing has changed there. And I mean, the other wide receiver options, the Roger Lewis's, Tavares Kings, to me feel like nothing more than dart throws. 1 o'clock game. Also, Falcons are playing the Panthers. I don't believe there's a line on this game now. No, there is. It came in late. So the Falcons are minus 2 favorites going into Carolina. Let's start with the Falcons here first. The offense is clearly different this season than it was last season under Shanahan. That thing seems like a complete. It just seems like there's just a completely different team. Like they were one of the most efficient teams in history last season, and now they've really, really struggled. What do we do with this Atlanta team? I mean, like. I feel like we talk about it every week and just like sort of don't know what to do. Guys like Julio Jones, Devontae Freeman. It's clear. I don't want to look back to last year and think that we're getting the same kind of production because we're clearly not at this point.
Yeah, we're not. Like Julio Jones has his most yards on the season are 108. His most catches on the season are 9. And, you know, he had been more like a $9,000 receiver in the past and was priced that way earlier this season. He's down to $7,900, which is actually around the price that I'm starting to get pretty interested in Julio Jones. I feel like I've spent all season just kind of poking fun at him and poking fun at the people who played them. And now we're, I guess, are we rewarded by him finally being priced fairly? I'm not really sure. But I think some people are going to look at him here. Obviously, Carolina's defense has never been as good against the past ever since they lost their true shutdown corner in Josh Norman. I think Julio actually is more interesting than a lot of people think here. I'm not sure what the right target number is for him. It's been so up and down and all over the place and very seemingly matchup dependent that he's a very hard guy to pin down. But he's definitely a guy I would consider in all formats for this
game. I have him at 8.75 targets in this game, which is more than his season average. This is one that we've wrestled with a lot about where to finally land on him. He's getting... you know, something of a downgrade here. He's going to be shadow covered by James Bradberry. I don't think, I mean, that doesn't seem like it's anything that we really need to worry about. It seems like it's come and gone here for Julio. I'm not exactly sure. Even with close to 9 targets, the system's just really not loving him. And I think it's partly because of this, drawing on what he's done or really not done this season. And just, they've struggled. The offense has just completely struggled. On the Carolina side, they traded away Kelvin Benjamin to the Buffalo Bills to free up, I presume, Curtis Samuel is going to get more of the wide receiver 2 looks, although they could start just lining up Christian McCaffrey more as a wide receiver as well, which wouldn't surprise me. I don't know. You know, we don't really have... we talked about Devin Funchess yesterday, but other than that, like, removing Kelvin Benjamin is like removing a pretty big piece of the offense, right? Like he was an every down wide receiver. He was an every down wide receiver, and he's just gone now. We talked about, you know, I was pretty high on Funchess, although I'm even after one day, I'm kind of starting to come down a little bit off that just because I'm a little worried about the Samuel and maybe McCaffrey thing. Is this too much of an unknown to like really trust in cash games?
I don't know. I think if the prices shake out in such a way that you can get Funchess and you don't feel like you're giving up much else, then I think he's a reasonable consideration for sure. I think if you go back, the plan seemed to be to involve him in the offense more so than he was involved against Tampa Bay. I think if you're going to get in those 8, 9, even 10 target range, that's pretty decent production on a $6,100 price tag. So I think you can play Funchess. I don't think you need to force it. Like, I don't think if you don't play him, you'll just be up against a wall of people who are going to be penciled in for 25 fantasy points, but I do think he's a solid play.
McCaffrey already leads all running backs and wide receivers, or excuse me, in passing targets with 66. The next closest guy is James White with 53. So he's by far the most targeted running back. I'm not sure what to really do with that information because as long as he's listed as a running back, and presumably that's where he's going to stay, he just doesn't carry the ball enough. And he's terrible at running the ball. Like in the 2.39 yards per carry is really not what you want to see. And I saw or read some stat yesterday that he has the worst yards after contact of anyone in the NFL. Like, so basically the first defender just takes him down every single time.
And that matters for catching the balls out of the backfield too. Not getting many yards after the catch either. And yeah, I think I'm not super interested in McCaffrey. Also, he just does a totally different thing for the offense than Benjamin does. Benjamin would just never be catching balls that would have gone to McCaffrey instead. So I don't think his profile changes at all here, really.
Yep, and I just think I'm starting to think that I want to take more of a wait-and-see approach on what the Carolina offense just does here.
I'm fine with that.
It's mostly just related to our discussion about Funchess yesterday. Definitely related to Cam. I don't think you'd want to go anywhere. I mean, we don't want to play Cam really almost ever anyway, but I think taking a wait-and-see approach on the Carolina just kind of attack and where they start to shift things is a reasonable thing to do this week. Another 1 o'clock game, Tampa Bay goes in to play the Saints. We did talk about Mark Ingram yesterday as a possible cash game play, even though he did end up splitting carries with Alvin Kamara last week, which is something of a concern. Let's start with the Saints side of the ball. I mean, after the running game, they have one of the highest totals of the week. I believe actually now they have the highest total now that the Texans game came down. What else do we like on this side of the ball? It seems like they have some weapons we can exploit.
I think there are a few things you can look at on the Saints that are pretty attractive, in my opinion. I mean, I think Ingram remains a very, very solid play, huge part of the offense. We saw even as the game script went against him a little bit in Chicago, still had the 24 touches and mostly, you know, the fumbles and so on. The narrative is that that caused him to lose touches, but still very, very much a part of the offense. Talked about him for the cash game plays yesterday. Michael Thomas, I think, is actually continually interesting. His fantasy points per game are pretty low overall, but he's got a great conversion rate this season, and the targets have really been there as well. I mean, he had the 6-target game against Detroit, but after that, fewest targets on the season have been 8. That was last week. He turned that into 7 receptions. I think if he can get in the end zone a little bit more, obviously that would be pretty nice, but I don't see anything particularly about his profile that should preclude him from getting to the end zone. I think it's just kind of a clustering effect of where he's caught his balls so far. So I do like Thomas quite a bit. I think he's even potentially cash game viable. I might like him just heads up over Julio Jones, for instance, for this week. And like I mentioned, Ingram as well.
Yeah, I really like Thomas here. Thomas is going to be he's a borderline cash game play, possibly just going to be a cash game play in this matchup.
Yeah, I think it's good.
I think it's funny too, because here's the thing, like this Watson, there's a trickling effect of Watson getting hurt more than just, you know, whether or not to play Deshaun Watson. He was also very expensive. And when when we talked about playing him yesterday, I wrote up the cash game article with the idea that there was a strong suspicion you were going to play Watson and really need to save other places. And that was one of the reasons that stopped me actually from writing up Michael Thomas, because I do like to, I don't know, I kind of like to make it so that, you know, our cash game article, you can reasonably build a lineup out of the picks, right? I don't like just writing up all the most expensive guys, because that seems like a cop-out. And so that's why I ended up leaving a guy like Thomas off the list. With him there, with Watson's salary gone, I think Thomas makes a completely reasonable play here. I think Breeze is cash game viable as well, honestly. There's a group of quarterbacks in this next non-Watson group that we're going to need to consider right now, and it's basically 4 guys that I'm putting in kind of all in the same basket of we're going to have end up considering them. Breeze is one of them, and we'll get to the other guys as we go through
the rest. For sure. Well, and we'll never know if this is going to be the case, but I suspect Breeze is actually the other end of Watson's touchdown luck. My prediction going forward for Watson for the rest of the season was that his touchdowns would trail off dramatically. My prediction for Breeze is that it goes in the other direction. I think you can't, we've seen the Saints go through spells like this in the past, but it's really difficult to be as efficient as Breeze is and to put up as many yards as the Saints do without turning those into touchdowns. And it hasn't happened dramatically so far this season. 12 touchdowns, I think, is way under expectation for what Breeze can do on the offensive side of the ball. And I think he's a little bit cheap here as a result. So, and also there's been some matchup issues too. They faced a number of the top 10 passing defenses on the year. And when they've been outside of those realms, you know, facing New England, facing Green Bay, he has put up good fantasy totals. So I really like Breeze for cash games here. Always tough to play a quarterback that gets no running whatsoever, yep. But I think he could be one exception to that rule.
And that's why I think we probably end up defaulting to the other two guys in this list, and that's, we're going to talk about it, but it's Dak and Russ Wilson. Actually, and Alex Smith is like somewhere is hovering around there as well. But yeah, the Saints have 29 implied points. That's the highest on the slate now that the Texans line has dropped. Other side of the ball, Saints defense hasn't been as bad as, you know, the Saints defense is one that we've always looked at as to say kind of like for years they spent just getting just completely crushed. That hasn't really been all the exact case this year. They've been pretty good. They've been especially good against the pass. They ranked 4th in DVOA against the pass, which I was shocked by, because I'm used to just seeing seasons and seasons of Saints defense just getting in the track meet like games, and that really hasn't been the case. The number 4 ranking in this is really damn good, and they actually, according to Pro Football Focus, they have the highest ranked cover cornerback in the league this year. So I don't know, where do you, that's Marshon Lattimore, where do you see, How do you want to do? Is there anything you want to attack with the Bucs side of the ball here? Are you as surprised as me by the Saints defense? They've still been bad against the run, but what do you like in the Tampa Bay side?
Well, when you take Mike Evans off the table, things get a little bit tricky. I think DeSean Jackson actually could be an interesting upside play here. He was a guy our system was kind of looking at last week. Had 8 targets against Carolina. Going into the Saints here, if Evans is going to be shadow covered by Lattimore, I think that could free up even more targets for him. And Jackson is kind of like, when he was good, he was a poor man's Mike Evans. But if Evans is going to be kind of taken out of the game here, I think that actually does free Jackson up as an interesting big tournament target. After that, I think the Bucs are just kind of too buckish for me to want to play any of these guys. Like, it feels like Doug Martin's been doing the exact same thing for 4 years, but I know that can't possibly be the case, and I just refuse to click on his name and see the history. But as I looked at his game log, I feel like I'm experiencing deja vu. 18 for 71, no touchdowns. 20 for 49, no touchdowns. Like, so what a snooze fest. This Bucs team is just so boring to me, especially if Evans is going to be out of the game.
Yep, and like I said, you can attack the Saints' run defense. They rank 29th there in DVOA, so they are what you can. There's a term for that called bottle defense, right? Where you just are really, really good at one thing and really bad at the other thing, and you can try to attack the thing they're really bad about, and it just happens to be Doug Martin. I'm with you. Bucks just really can't get anything going on offense. Baltimore goes in to play Tennessee. I always laugh because some of these games just seem so boring. The Baltimore. They've just, all they wanted to do this season is run the ball. They've run a ton with Alex Collins. I think last week, Javorius Allen has gotten a ton of touches. They just don't want to pass at all. This game seems like it's going to be very slow. I don't know if you have just too much of a committee in Baltimore or too much of a committee in Tennessee as well. I mean, where Henry and Murray are still splitting carries. Anything you like at all about this game?
Well, you certainly can't play anyone on the Baltimore side of the ball. Let's get that out of the way right now. They want to run, but they also split the carries up among everybody, so there's literally just no value to be had. You just can't play a single player on their whole team, so thanks a lot. When it comes to Tennessee, I think you pretty well analyzed the running back situation. I think Rishard Matthews, as kind of like a fringe outside play, still, there's still a part of me that knows that Tennessee probably wouldn't mind giving him the ball 8 or 10 times a game, but they just still haven't figured out a way to do that. So, unfortunately, this game, for my purposes, is probably just a full-on skipperoni.
Yep, I think so too. I don't know. I was looking something up. I don't know if you mentioned Rishard Matthews, the guy that
I
sometimes
did,
creeps. Okay, yeah. All right, so skip that. Sorry, I wasn't listening. I was looking at something else. All right, let's move on to
Cool.
Cincinnati goes in to face Jacksonville. Jacksonville is a -5 favorite at home. We did talk a lot about Leonard Fournette yesterday being a pretty strong cash game play. I have a feeling, at least on FanDuel, we land on Fournette as the guy that's under just the cheapest of the top three-ish running backs that kind of come into the elite target and you excuse me running and usage category. So I think Fournette's there, but man, the Cincinnati team. So I think I think Fournette is the. Would you agree? Fournette is the only thing we can really consider on the Jacksonville side of the ball.
Yes.
Okay. So Cincinnati side, is there any? I mean, the Jacksonville defense. I believe they rank number one in DVOA this season. Yeah, they're number one. They're number one against the pass, 32 against the rush. But there's no. I mean, there's no chance we go back to. We had some Joe Mixon last week. We want no part of this, right? Like the. I'd be
We
hard
got
pressed.
bailed out by a long reception. That was pretty fortuitous. DVOA. This is. I always struggle with DVOA, even at this point in the season, because if you look at Jacksonville's strength of schedule, they played against some real stinkers on the offensive side. So here's just a list of quarterbacks they faced. So they went Tom Savage, Mariota, Flacco, then they get the Jets, then they go Steelers. Okay, that was a tough one, and then they go Rams. So like they've had a really, really favorable schedule so far this season. I think a lot of people view the Jacksonville pass defense as a paper tiger, and I think I see them the same way. That being said, Cincinnati is just not the type of team that can punish them, and this will probably only solidify Jacksonville's ranking even further. I do think AJ Green's kind of interesting for big tournament purposes, but I wouldn't get sucked in on him for cash games, even at the $8,200 price tag, because if you look at his game log, it's basically just Julio Jones's game log with one more good game, and otherwise it's been very, very up and down. Again, people that played him last week got bailed out by him getting a touchdown, but 3 catches in back-to-back weeks doesn't really look like an $8,200 receiver writ large. So, unfortunately, I think it's another team where you just kind of don't feel amazing, and you probably have to stay away unless you're just trying to get separation.
Yeah, Green probably draws a lot of Jalen Ramsey as well. So I think that there is a stack there that makes sense if you're playing Fournette, where if you're going to go Fournette, I think you can actually go like Fournette, Jacksonville D, and then like maybe like an AJ Green too, if you think they're playing catch up near the end. Like I think like something that does make sense. And I actually do think I think we mentioned this yesterday, but Jacksonville defense I do believe is going to be one of the higher owned just fantasy defenses this week. They are very expensive, but this is a really good spot. This Cincinnati team, they can't do a whole one part of the game, which is run the ball, right? So like, and if you're facing a team that they're not going to be able to run the ball at all, so I think the Jacksonville D in a really good spot. Denver goes in to face the Eagles. Brock Osweiler shows back here. This quarterback situation for Denver is a complete mess. Simeon, I don't know if he's hurt or what's going on or just bad. Like it's probably some
Could be hurt and
combination.
bad.
Yeah, I think it is. There's almost no way to look worse than he's been. So anyway, and you got to be really damn bad if you get benched for Brock Osweiler like in the middle of the season. So Osweiler is going to come in here. Denver has a very low line. I don't think you can touch anything on that side of the ball against Philly. I'm actually surprised. It's good. It's probably just a testament to their defense that Philly's only -8 against this, considering that it's hard to imagine the offense doing much of anything. Philly side of the ball, they are going to get Jay Ajayi here, but they're also saying LeGarrette Blount is still the starting running back. I mean, who knows? Do we just want to take a wait and see approach? Is this the appropriate time to just to take a wait and see approach on what the Eagles' plans are?
Yeah, just figure out what they're going to do. Just look at the carry split, I think, is really what we want to do going forward. You probably wouldn't play either of these running backs, even if there were clarity around the role, just in such a bad matchup with Denver. I think we can wait a week. See, and if Jay Ajayi gets 15 carries and Blunt gets 4, then I think we can really think about Ajayi going forward, and vice versa. You know, the same thing would happen. That's not going to happen. Blunt is not going to be the feature back, I wouldn't guess. But I think we can just take a week. There's no reason to force it against Denver's defense.
I think you can consider the Eagles' defense here to play them. They are also expensive. They and Jacksonville are both, in, at least on FanDuel, 53 and 5,200 respectively. I'd rather play the Jacksonville D in this scenario, but I think you can pivot. There's a case to be made to pivoting to the Eagles as well, because it's hard to imagine this Denver team doing much of anything on offense considering the quarterback situation. And their running game has struggled as well. The last 1 o'clock game is, that we're done with the 1 o'clock games. Now that we're done with the 1 o'clock games, hit us up with a sponsor.
Yeah, let's talk about draftboard.com. They're a new sponsor that's come on board with us, and we're really excited to, you know, bring them to you because they've got a lot of values that we really share. You know, I think they're really thinking about the long-term sustainability of the game, and to try to honor that, they're offering a lot of, you know, single entry contests. They do blind head-to-head, so you don't get to pick your opponent. So you can't have the best players in the world coming around and hunting you down if they think you're kind of new to the game or whatever. They also will give you a free dollar to play with if you go there and sign up through one of our links on our site. And after that, if you get the highest overall score, then you get $10,000. So if you get the highest score, I think, I don't want to misstate this, but I think this is the terms of the offer, is that if you outscore everybody else this season, so you get the highest score on their site for the season, then you get $10,000. That's pretty cool. So go there, sign up, draftboard.com. Sign up through our links just so they know we sent you. Or you can just go there and go play because they're good folks, good software, and we certainly approve of what they got going on.
All right, 4 o'clock games. Start off with a good one here. Arizona and San Francisco. We get Drew Stanton versus CJ Beathard going. I was tempted to just yell skip at this one too, because I just don't.
What else? What other option is there?
There really isn't. Guys like Larry Fitzgerald's price have really come down, and I guess there's some scenario where something happens in this game. I mean, like, Vegas doesn't have this as a 0 point. there's not 0 points going up in the implied total to start it, so something's going to happen. I mean, the Cardinals right around 21. If you think that there's any hope, I there's some scenario, I think, where you can talk yourself into, like, for a tournament playing Larry Fitzgerald just because of the price.
This isn't even really a discount, dude. We were getting him for $6,400 at the beginning of the season. I get that it's cheaper than it was last week and the week before that, but I don't know. I think that's we're talking about relative value, and going from Palmer to Stanton is such a downgrade that I think that the price actually hasn't dropped nearly far enough for me to be personally interested. Now, it could change. Like, Stanton could come out there and throw to him 15 times. That's absolutely in play with a strong possession receiver like Fitzgerald, but I'm definitely not counting on him.
Let me be clear. I'm mostly more talking about his DraftKings price at $5,900, not $7,000 on FanDuel. So gotcha. That's more where I'm looking. Like, he's in the same... He's interesting because he's in the same pricing tier as, like, Devin Funchess, right? And that one is, like, a little closer to me than – it's just closer to me than I thought it would be, just because I think maybe Fitzgerald's pedigree or just, like, some of what he – and maybe he's drawing too much in his season stats up to this point. So I can look into this as well. I just don't mind – I really don't mind at the DraftKings price. More for tournaments, I wouldn't trust it in cash. On the San Francisco side – they did trade for Jimmy Garoppolo, but he is not going to play this week. It's still going to be Beathard. Pierre Garçon was put on the IR, so he's out for the season. So now their wide receiver crew is like Marquise Goodwin and Aldrick Robinson and guys like this. I don't think that's anything we wanted to consider. Garçon was okay as a possession receiver, but where they're going to be filling in with him just doesn't seem like a place that we should be all that interested in playing. Washington goes in to face Seattle. Seattle's a -7 favorite. They're doing a Seattle thing here where they come out and said Eddie Lacy is going to be the feature back. We're going to see what we have in him, or something, some stupid line like that.
Now seems like a good time to do that. You know?
I did increase Lacy's touches a little bit more. -7 home favorite here. This is usually where we want to buy on running backs. Does the news, does that, you know, quote unquote news on Lacy, have any interest in him? Where he's still coming pretty cheap. He's only $5,300 on FanDuel, which is, I mean, that's bottom of the barrel when it comes to running backs. And I'll look up his price here. Yeah, $3,200 on DraftKings. So he's a complete punt play, right? Like, these are complete punt prices. Does that news that he could be touching the ball a little bit more interest you at all as a home favorite?
Not really. He got the ball 6 times last week and carried that 4. 0 yards. So I don't know. I mean, he could be as featured as he wants to be, I guess. The running game is just not part of the plan in Seattle right now. It's Russell Wilson left, right, and center, and maybe they want to see what they have with him, but maybe you consider it on DraftKings if it's your last slot and you're going to play a backup tight end there or something anyway, or just, you know, a second tight end for your team. But, like, in a vacuum, would you rather play him or, like, Jack Doyle? I'd rather play Jack Doyle. I don't know where Lacy fits in on my team or, you know, what really great expensive play he affords for me. The expensive plays aren't that amazing this week anyway. I just don't think that this is a week where I want to take a stars and scrubs approach with a guy who had 6 carries again for 0 yards last week.
Yep, he stinks. I get sucked into these situations more than I should. And I admit that about myself. I get sucked into the siren song of a starting running back, especially in like a good spot like this. And yeah, I mean, actual skill usually wins out or loses out in cases like of Eddie Lacy. So if I find it interesting and I want to just make sure that on Sunday morning you're doing a good job of talking me out of it, because I think I'm going to be, it's not going to land there in cash games, but I think I'm going to want to do it more than probably any reasonable or sane person should. Like even a guy who wore someone else's shoes home wouldn't probably want to play Eddie Lacy, but I feel like I'm in a weird spot with guys like this. Other guy, we did talk a lot about Russell Wilson as a really viable cash gameplay. He just may be the cash gameplay going this week without Watson there. So we don't really need to go back too far into him. Other pieces of the passing game, Baldwin. Baldwin saw the most targets, but guys like Lockett and Richardson had the bigger games last week. How do you kind of break down the Seattle pass game when you see kind of stat lines that these guys had last week?
See, I think this is interesting. I'm sure these guys are going to see some ownership this week. Our system, for whatever reason, picked up on Richardson as a potential play last week, which we promptly ignored and made sure he didn't show up in the lineups. I think both he and Lockett represent obviously serious upside, just because we know what they're capable of after last week. But I think there's also a little bit of risk. I actually think there's more risk on the Richardson side than the Lockett side, just based on the sheer number of targets these guys have been getting. But I think it's... I understand the allure of it, given what we just saw last week, and I think that level of production feels a little bit unsustainable, I guess is what I'll say. So I think both are reasonable plays. I think it's totally fine to pick one to round out your cash games. I think it's actually pretty unlikely that they'll kill you completely, just because I think the ownership will be there. I would hesitate to just go like Wilson, Richardson, Lockett, which I think is what a lot of people are going to do and try to pay up elsewhere. I just have a hard time believing that, you know, if Paul Richardson gets 7 targets in any given week, that he's going to turn that into 26 fantasy points very often.
I love going back to Baldwin here. We played Baldwin last week, and I'm going to do it again this week. I think that for all the reasons you just mentioned, the recency bias wrapped up in those huge games that those guys had, where they just converted an insane amount, where they converted so many targets, and if Richardson specifically converted them to so many touchdowns, is going to weigh in people's minds. Baldwin was like 2 deep balls that were just past his hands from having his 6-for-54 line look more like 8-for-125. And the way that game was going, it's reasonable to just say that like the game, these lines could have looked a lot different. And you can probably say that about a lot of football games, but Baldwin specifically, the reason I'm encouraged by it is even when those other guys having such huge games, he still led this team in targets, right? And 6,900 on DraftKings to me is just too cheap for a guy who's one of the target leaders. I mean, he's not like a top, I don't believe he's a top 10 target guy this season, but he's right on the edge. Yeah, actually, well, he's not top 10 overall, but when you take away all the guys that are on buys or have been injured already, he moves pretty far up this list of just targets of target share for a team of guys going this week. I really like him. I really like him on DraftKings where he's in that mid-range. I think he's only like 6,900 or something like that over there. So anyway, long story short, love Baldwin here. And he's not going to draw Josh Norman shadow coverage either. So I think he's still in a plus matchup. Washington side of the ball, looks like they're going to be without both the tight ends in Jordan Reed and Niles Paul. Any interest in Vernon Davis, Jameson Crowder's coming up a big week. Anything you like in the passing game here from against the Seattle team that got shredded last week by Watson?
Yeah, I think I might like Crowder better than the two Seattle receivers in this game. I think there are more reasons why he should get more receptions rather than kind of natural variance, which I kind of view the Seattle game as. I just also think Washington has precious few weapons. Like, who are the other guys that can even catch the ball in the air on this team besides Crowder? In the old, they're going to score points, and those points have to come somewhere category. I think Crowder's the guy. He might be my favorite sub $5,900 receiver this week, just to not cheat on Shepard there. But But yeah, I think the Washington situation is pretty messy, and it's pretty hard to figure out where the value is going to show up, if there will be any to be had at all.
Yeah, I do, and like I said, I do think that Vernon Davis is a reasonable punt play if you think that he's going to take all the tight end snaps, which it really looks like he will. They do throw to the tight ends, though not a ton. Although, like you said, this the wide receiver core is looking pretty bad at this point. So it would be interesting to see where the system. They're getting pretty significant downgrades against some of these Seattle cornerbacks too. So it's going to take a lot of targets, I think, to bump them all the way up into cash game viability. And I'm not sure really we want to go there anyway, but I think from a tournament upside piece, there is a lot to like on the Washington side of the ball, especially if they're playing catch up. 4:25 game, KC goes in Dallas. It looks like it seems pretty certain at this point that Ezekiel Elliott is completely suspended, right? So, like, I know this had been going back and forth, and I kind of got lost in, is he suspended? Is he not?
God willing,
is he not suspended? Alfred Morris has taken the first team snaps at running back this week. He's coming very cheap on FanDuel. He's only, I think he's in that same kind of Eddie Lacy price range, I believe. Where do we do? Yeah, he's 5,600. Is it enough to trust that he's going to get the carries on a team that they love to run the ball, obviously, but there's also guys like Rod Smith and Darren McFadden sort of waiting in the wings. Now, McFadden has not played a snap this year, so I don't know what you would reasonably expect out of him to just come in. Is it enough for you that Morris has taken the first team reps? Is he cheap enough at 5,600 on a good team that you can consider playing him in cash?
Well, I waffled back and forth on this a little bit. The only thing that's giving me pause here, because normally I would say yes, I do think, you know, all the signs point to, and even the coach speak and all that kind of stuff points to Alfred Morris being the heir apparent to Ezekiel Elliott's, 35 touches a game or whatever. But I think it's probably going to be more like a split between him and Rod Smith. Rod Smith actually out-touched him in their last game, and that's a little troubling. I mean, the fact that he had 8 carries and 2 targets, and Morris in that game had just, I guess that was 2 games ago, so I take it back. He just skipped the last game completely. But in that game, when Smith was healthy and Morris played as well, he out-touched Morris by 7 touches, and I think that's a little bit troubling, I guess, to me, but I do think that Morris, we've seen him be a feature back in the past, so we don't really have the durability concerns necessarily, and also the running game is just such a huge part of what Dallas has to do here, so it's hard to imagine them going from 30-plus touches for a running back per game to, 18, and so for that reason, I think, given how cheap these guys are, it's okay to just play the starter, and if he gets 15 carries and Smith gets 8, I don't think you find yourself taking a bloodbath or anything.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to see where the ownership percentages come in on Morris, because this is it's a public team. It's a very public situation. They are a good team. There's, Vegas likes this, I believe, as a pick 'em. And with points going up on the board, this is something I'm going to want to read more about and just see where I think the industry is going to land on Morris, because I think that will be. It is somewhat, I think it could be somewhat of a polarizing decision trying to figure out what this team is going to do. I do think that you can trust the Dak, and I think you can trust Dak a lot. I think they're going to need him to throw the ball more. I think he's right up there with Wilson in terms of cash game play. Actually, let me get your opinion there. Dak or Wilson, they're basically the same price. Wilson's 8,500, Dak's 8,200 on FanDuel, and then on DraftKings, I believe they're right around the same price as well. Is there one guy between those two? And Wilson's about 600 more expensive. So you are getting a savings on Dak. Is there a guy, if you were to choose, who do you think you would trust more, the Prescott or Wilson thing for cash?
I think I trust Wilson more just because, yeah, while theoretically Ezekiel Elliott leaving opens up more for Dak, it also creates a larger burden on him just in terms of Dallas actually moving the ball and moving the chains and, passing to people out of the backfield and that kind of thing. I know Dak has flashed some pretty significant upside so far this season, but Wilson has too, and I think losing Elliott is enough of a blow to that offense as a whole that I'd rather just take the security of knowing that we're going to get the same Wilson situation that we have recently.
And we talked about Dez yesterday. I like Dez as a cash game play a lot in this. I think he sees a significant amount of targets in not a terrible matchup against his KCD. On the KC side, we've seen a big start of the season from Kareem Hunt, and that's really tailed off as the season's gone on. They're still very much a three skill position attack in between Hunt, Kelce, and Tyreek Hill. Where do you see yourself kind of on ownership on any of these guys in that group, and then possibly even Alex Smith for cash? Our system does like Smith. He's sitting slightly below the other guys we talked about in Prescott, Wilson, and Breeze, but he's getting close in terms of just overall points. How do you like the KC side?
Smith, I think, is somewhat intriguing. I don't know why I would want to play him over Prescott or Wilson. I just think both of those guys are a little bit better relatively similar price range. I think both have higher upside than Smith too, so not super interested there. I'm not going to play Kareem Hunt for reasons I said yesterday. I won't go too deep down that, but I think Kareem Hunt just looks for all the world like an $8,000 running back that had a $9,000 running back start to the season, and for that reason, I don't know. You're still buying really high. Like, there's only, in any given season, there's usually only one running back that will sustain a price like this and actually pay it off over the course of the season, and that's almost always Le'Veon Bell since we've started this. And Kareem Hunt looked like he could be that guy, but recently, like, you know, the guy hasn't scored a touchdown in 5 weeks. Like, I don't know. Why am I paying $9,000? He hasn't scored a touchdown or had more than 107 running yards in 5 weeks. So pass. I'm not going to play Kareem Hunt. Tyreek Hill, you know, I think he's the type of guy whose production probably is just under the price. So I'm not quite on him either. And then I think after that, we're on Travis Kelce. And I think Kelce's interesting. But again, I don't know if this is the position where I want to pay up for a guy who had a good week last week, but in the prior 2 weeks had 70 yards combined. So I think Kansas City, unfortunately, that was a really long way of saying they look like a skip to me this week.
Yeah, I think they're just all priced just a little bit out of range of what you want to pay for their production. Again, like, they're, because this team is so concentrated in terms of where they get all their points, you are going to get, and they're a pretty consistent team in terms of scoring points, you are going to get.
Well, they were in like a line too, and they had so many possessions early in the season thanks to those huge plays by Kareem Hunt. And as those plays have declined, everyone's production is down just a little bit, but not down enough to lower everyone's price. So I just think it's not a good spot.
As we were talking, this couldn't have happened any other way. The court grants Ezekiel Elliott's motion, and he's going to play Sunday. So he's got to love
is
this.
Is that real life?
I swear to God. Yeah, I just came in. I was reading this on Twitter as you were talking about the KC thing. So take back everything I said about Morris. Actually, real quick, I know this is on the fly because we actually really hadn't prepped for this because I really thought he was going to be out. Does this put Zeke into contention for you, or do you not? I mean, I know I'm putting you on the spot. He's still priced with that other group of guys, and he's less than Hunt and he's less than Gurley. He's only 8,900. He's 300 more than Fournette on FanDuel. I mean, gun to your head, I know this is like a split second decision here. Do you think that puts him right back into contention here in terms of cash game?
It does. Yeah, it definitely does. I think just the raw number of touches puts him in contention. It's roughly a league average matchup with Washington. I know the yards really haven't been there, but the yards per carry at the flat 4.0 is roughly around the league median. So I think you can consider Elliott for sure. I don't know if that's where we'll land up, because to your point, we haven't processed or calculated or prepared for that news, but I think he'll definitely at least be a guy who we're discussing and looking at the prop for and that kind of thing.
Yep, I think that changes my whole opinion. I'm glad we got that in there before the podcast ended, as we were kind of sprinting toward the finish here. So Elliott going to play. We'll update our projections pretty shortly. Oakland goes in to play Miami. Miami looks like they're going to be in a timeshare, a running back timeshare between Kenyon Drake and Damian Williams, so who cares? Oakland is a -3 favorite here on the road going into Miami. I mean, their offense, this is just a completely different offense than it was last year. This is an offense that was putting up tons of points last season. There's just not, has not been happening. They are projected for 23.5 implied points going in. Amari Cooper, Michael Crabtree, I don't think you can touch the run game, but do you like any of those guys in this matchup against Miami?
I don't really think so. I think the inconsistency around the performance is more than enough to spook me off of the prices. Cooper and Crabtree both are priced like guys who appear to be pretty safe, but have been anything but. I think Cooper is still pretty interesting as an upside play. He did get the 10 targets last week against Buffalo. Didn't turn them into a whole lot, and that's kind of Cooper's profile. You know, like, he'll come and go. You know, he can get a lot of targets and turn them into almost nothing, or occasionally turn them into 200 yards. So I think if you're looking for big tournament purposes, definitely a guy to keep an eye on. It seems like the Raiders are at least committed to keeping him a part of the offense, for what that's worth. And it's certainly worth something. I mean, they can still do a decent amount on this offensive side of the ball. It's just that for your cash game purposes, just understand you're going to get some 7-point weeks sprinkled in with your 15-point weeks.
Jay Cutler is practicing this week and is going to play again. Jarvis Landry is a guy, he's averaging close to 11.5 targets a game this season. I have him
second in the NFL.
Yeah, I have him at 10, right, just south of 11 targets projected right now. He's got a pretty high projection in our system with Cutler back. I mean, Cutler stinks, but Cutler looked at him over and over and over again. Where do you see a guy like Landry fitting into possibly into cash games this week?
I think he can fit in. I mean, 80 targets, like I said, is the second highest in the NFL behind Antonio Brown, and you get a dramatic savings, obviously, of any of the guys in this category. The next guy is DeAndre Hopkins. He's off the list. And then you go down into guys that are kind of in Landry's category, actually, in Adam Thielen and Keenan Allen. Mike Evans off the little radar. Amari Cooper, we talked about him. Pierre Garçon. So you're getting a lot out of Jarvis Landry that you can't really get out of this price range from other guys. I mean, if you just compare him to the guy that he'll be lining up against in Amari Cooper, the level of consistency you get in Landry is so much higher. And likewise with Crabtree. So I think Landry definitely a consideration. You don't love that he only turned that 12 targets into 5 catches for 33 yards last week, but the fact that he's just continuing to... He's the only option, it seems like, if they want to have any safe plays whatsoever. And I know, you know, Kenny Stills had a big week. Parker had a big week there. But Landry seems to be the one constant that Miami's going to keep going back to.
Yep, and that's unfortunately not on the main slate for DraftKings because it's the Sunday night game. He is available on FanDuel, but where PPRs, he's not as attractive of a FanDuel option just because it's a half point PPR, though they have targeted him in the red zone as well, so not a terrible play.
What do you think about Kenny Stills real quick here?
Yeah, with Parker back, I'm kind of off it. Parker's supposed to play this week, so I think that I think I would probably take Kenny Stills. I downgraded Stills on the idea that Parker's just going to be back there in that wide receiver two slot. Last game on the Monday night game, Detroit goes into Green Bay. Anything interest here? I mean, I know this is not on the main slate, so it's not going to be a huge part of our cast considerations, but before we get out of here, any thoughts on the Monday night game?
Yeah, I mean, we were all waiting to see what the Packers would do now that Rodgers is out and, you know, Hundley was in. And they haven't really impressed very much. I mean, the prices are way down on all these guys, let's be clear. But the fact that they really didn't support any offensive production out of their wide receiver core against New Orleans has me feeling pretty bearish, I guess. I mean, we saw what Detroit did to the Pittsburgh passing game last week, especially their ability to kind of just pick a receiver and take them out of the game with Slay there. So I don't really love the Packers side of the ball. And then that kind of leaves us with Detroit. Is there anything you're seeing on Detroit that you really like?
I still like Tate's goal, target share, and nothing else really. We've seen enough targets from Jones. I think that this game, just it being on the Monday night game, is just going to probably like rank pretty low for me just in terms of like my mental bandwidth. So I think that's probably kind of where I end up on it. I think if you're playing those shorter slates, the wide receiver core for Detroit is interesting. It's hard to get behind what they're doing in the run game just because they're another team that's kind of struggled to get much of anything going. All right, we're going to get out of here.
Oh. Yeah, Jones was kind of great. Jones was kind of great last week. I do think Jones is definitely, like, if you're playing that Sunday into Monday slate, or God forbid you're playing the early Sunday into Monday for whatever reason, then Jones, I think, is definitely a guy to consider. At 6,000, we probably would be considering him for play on the main slate, given the average of 12.5 targets.
Okay, so Marvin Jones. Just making sure that this thing should be doing Marvin Jones or Aaron Jones. Okay. All right, we're going to get out of here. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Go over / NBA. We'll get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Buddy, enjoy your week 9 in the NFL, and I'm going to go look for my shoes.
Peace in the Middle East.